Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast. My name is Vanessa Walker and I'm the managing editor of Money. We have a story in our October issue about franking credits. And let me tell you, it will answer all of your questions about this commonly used yet not always understood phrase in the investing world. Here to explain is Matthew Gibbs, who wrote our story, called Frankly Speaking, in the October issue, which is on sale now. Welcome, Matthew.
Thank you, Vanessa. Lovely to be here.
Great.
But you've certainly been piling on the pressure. Gosh, answer all your questions. I hope so.
We've let you off lightly, Matthew. Let's start at the beginning. What does the term franked actually mean? It's not very self-explanatory to a lot of people.
No, well, most people, I guess, come across the word frank in terms of speaking candidly or something to do with a hot dog. But I don't know whether either of those definitions have got anything to do with the one that interests us. But franked in this context means free of obligation. That's the root of the word. And we might be familiar with it in a postage sense. Most of us have come across that concept of postage being franked, which means that the stamp is already paid for. So franked in this context means that the thing being received is free of obligation. And of course, that's the tax that a company has already paid on a dividend that it's distributing to a shareholder. So franked means that the dividend that the shareholder is receiving comes without the obligation to pay tax, which the company has already paid for.
Got it. So what does the term franking credit mean? Basically, that means that you have no obligation. You're free of paying this tax.
Yes, you're credited. You, the receiver of the dividend, is credited already with the tax that the company has paid. And this relates neatly to the other definition or the words that are often used to describe the same concept of franking credits, and that's dividend imputation. And that means that the shareholder is imputed to have already paid the tax, or in other words, that the tax paid by the company is imputed or attributed already to the shareholder. So that's the credit.
Right.
So instead of the shareholder being obligated to pay the tax completely on that profit, which began as profit and then is now being paid as a dividend, that the shareholder receives a credit for that tax that the company has already paid. And this, of course, allows the shareholder, the investor, to reduce their own tax obligations.
Nice. That's a good thing.
Well, it might be. It's interesting you say that. Of course, as individuals, yes, anything that reduces our tax is desirable, it would seem. And at the risk of getting all bleeding heart here, one thing to be aware of course, is whilst we as individuals might benefit from paying less tax, there's a cost to the state. Less tax revenue means potentially less services, less money available for governments to spend on services. So there's always that flip side of the apparent lovely desirability of reducing our own tax obligations.
So say you're a shareholder, how do those franking credits affect your share dividends?
Well, it's not so much that it affects your dividends, but rather how much tax you pay on them. Because remember that the franking credit is a credit for tax that's already been paid. Essentially, it means that the receiver of those franking credits attached to the dividends that they get from the companies they're invested in, will pay in tax the difference between their own marginal tax rate, which might be 16%, 30%, 45%, whatever their marginal tax rate might be, and it's normally 30% that the company has already paid in company tax. So, for example, if your marginal tax rate as a shareholder is 37%, you receive a fully franked dividend from a company that you're invested in that equals 30%. So effectively, you're exposed for that 7% discount. Now, it works the other way too. If your marginal tax rate is actually less than the 30% company tax rate, you'll receive a credit for that. You'll get a cash return from the tax office when you do your tax, so that franking credit that you've received is not lost. So that's another one of the major attractions, a more recent addition to the list of attractions of franking credits, that if your marginal rate is actually less than the rate that the company has already paid, well, you'll receive that difference back.
So if franking credits are so advantageous for shareholders, why don't all companies offer them?
It's a good question. A lot of it's got to do with the fact that franking credits are only available to, first of all, Australian companies that are paying tax in Australia. So that's the first thing, that you as a company will only receive franking credits for tax you've paid if it's tax you've paid in Australia. And of course, not all companies that operate in Australia pay Australian tax only. And indeed, not all Australian companies that do pay some tax in Australia only pay tax in Australia. What I mean by that is, this is when you'll get situations where even an Australian company that is paying tax in Australia might also be paying tax in another jurisdiction, distributing the combined profits made from their activities to investors, but because they've paid tax in another jurisdiction, reflecting where they might be generating their earnings, they're not paying what's called a fully franked or a 100% franked dividend to their shareholders. It might only be a partially franked dividend. So not all companies, despite the desirability, particularly to Australian investors, not all companies pay franking credits, and not all of them pay 100% fully franked franking credits. So foreign investors that might be investing in Australian companies, even if those Australian companies are paying fully franked dividends, they will not get the benefit of those fully franked dividends. So you have to be an investor, an Australian investor who's paying tax in Australia to get the benefit of those franking credits.
Can you give us an example with some numbers in it? Are you able to kind of bring it alive for our listeners?
I don't know whether it will bring it alive, but yes, we can use an example. And forgive me, listeners, we need to make it as simple as possible just to make the point. So using a very simple example, let's say a company makes a profit of $1,000 and it's a company in Australia where the corporate tax rate is 30%. Of course, there's a lower corporate tax rate too in Australia for smaller companies, but let's say it's one of the larger companies. It makes $1,000, so 30% on that would ordinarily be $300. So it pays $300 in corporate tax on that profit of $1,000. So it's got a net profit then of $700, which it distributes as a dividend to a shareholder. So the shareholder receives what's known as a grossed up dividend, which is the combination of the cash dividend paid. In the example we're talking about, that's the $700 in net profit distributed by the company. The shareholder also receives details of the franking credit. So that's the amount that the company has already paid in tax, and that was $300 in our example. So the shareholder has to declare in his or her tax statement that grossed up amount of $1,000, the $700 cash dividend, the $300 franking credit. So if then the shareholder's income tax rate is, say, 37%, and ignoring, again, for purposes of this example, keeping it as simple as possible, ignoring other levies, Medicare levies, any deductions, et cetera, et cetera. So if the shareholder's income tax rate is 37%, they've received a grossed up dividend of $1,000. Ordinarily then, their tax obligation would be $370, 37% of $1,000. But this is the magic of the franking credit. Once you then apply to that $370 tax obligation, the $300 franking credit, that then reduces the shareholder's tax liability down to $70. Now, another example might be, let's say, again, shareholder receives the same amounts, a grossed up dividend of $1,000 representing $700 in cash dividend, $300 in franking credit. But rather than that, the individual shareholder having a marginal tax rate of 37%, let's say their tax rate is 16%. So that means that the tax ordinarily that that shareholder would need to pay is $160. In other words, 16% of $1,000. But they have this $300 franking credit. So what the ATO does is take the $300 away from their obligation. Their obligation is $160. You take $300 away from $160, it leaves a credit to you of $140. And that's the refund that goes to the shareholder. In other words, since 2000, I think it was, when the Howard government brought in this particular rule, that any unused portions of franking credits could be returned to the shareholder. It's probably worth pointing out that before that was introduced in 2000, the initial concept of franking credits came in under the Hawke Keating government in 1987. Prior to that, there was this thing called double taxation. Companies were taxed, and then shareholders or investors were taxed when the company profits were passed to those investors or shareholders as dividends. But since 2000, as I say, there's been this additional benefit where any unused portion of franking credits will be returned to shareholders or to the investor.
Now, in your story, you raise an issue to beware of, a possible change in the corporate tax rate. Can you take us through that?
Well, it's more just rather than something that that I know is coming, I have no crystal ball. It's just, as we touched on earlier, whilst franking credits are very desirable, there's always other sides to them. There are things to bear in mind. And one of those is the simple fact that the benefit of a franking credit, at least on the surface, is attached to the corporate tax rate. So using the example that we mentioned earlier, if your personal tax rate is 37% and the company tax rate is 30%, that exposure, the difference is only 7%. But if the corporate tax rate goes down, for example, let's say it goes down to 25% or 20%, all of a sudden your exposure increases. Instead of 7%, it might be potentially 15% or 17%. So investors need to bear in mind that any reduction in the corporate tax rate will have implications for the franking credit regime as well. The flip side, though, is, of course, if companies are paying less tax because the corporate tax rate is reduced, yes, it might reduce the tax effectiveness or the tax benefit for them in franking credits because there are now less franking credits attached to those dividends. But if companies are paying less tax, well, they might then pay more in dividends to their shareholders. So what the shareholder potentially might lose in franking credits, they might actually gain in overall dividends. I think this is an example of what's commonly known as a first world problem for those investors. But that's just something that investors need to bear in mind. Whilst it's not necessarily a bad thing to go off and invest in companies for the sake of attracting the franking credits, you need to keep things in balance. One of the concerns, well, one of the risks that need to be managed with franking credits is what's known as a home bias, the idea that you will only invest in companies, so in this context it's Australian companies, you'll only invest in Australian companies that pay fully franked dividends. Now, that might not be a bad thing, but it means you might be missing out on opportunities elsewhere. So it's up to you to bear that in mind when you're making your investment decisions, of course.
All right, Matthew, wise words. Thank you so much. You can read Matthew's story on franking credits in our October issue. It's on sale now. There's a whole lot more in there too. The top 20 ETFs to grow your wealth, new ways to career success for those kids who are leaving school, and an emerging markets update. If you want to buy the print edition, you can go to your newsagent or you can subscribe to the print edition. You can also buy a single digital issue on our app, or you can subscribe digitally. Matthew, thank you so much for your time making something that seemed complex so clear. We really appreciate that.
Oh, my great pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.